On this month's Over the Fence, we give you our belated E3 favorites. When Witcher 2's PC exclusivity ends, EA thinks they have the chops to take on Valve. Holodecks are finally real. Where have I been? Nintendo's new console announced. Torchlight devs are okay with piracy. All that and much, much more on Over the Fence.
Hello, ladies, and well-cultured gentlemen. Welcome to Over the Fence, a podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, technology, and fine-smelling body wash. With us tonight, we have Chad.
Howdy.
We have David.
What? Where am I?
We have Jonathan.
Hello, ladies.
And we have me, Eric.
So, anyway, yeah, we've had a few geek conventions happen since our last podcast. Two big ones, at least. We've had E3, we've had Comic-Con, so let's get right into it. Let's hit the first one here, E3. Okay, so we're a little bit late, but what are your impressions from the show? Obviously, most of the news is already out. Our listeners will know most of that already, but let's just get kind of opinions on it. How did you guys look at E3? What stood out most for you? What did you like? What didn't you like?
Okay. Tomb Raider, amazing one.
Yes, it was. Yes. David?
Mass Effect 3.
Oh, I'm sad about that.
I'm going to have to... I'm loving the look of Mass Effect 3. I'm really liking what's happening with it.
My surprise was the sleeper hit Prey 2. I am really shocked at what they've managed with it. You know, when I heard they were doing a sequel, I'm like, really? Do we need a sequel to this game? Mm. And it looks solid. Actually, there's a lot of games from the show where I was kind of like, you know, do what now? Take my money!
For me, the big standout wasn't actually something positive. It was something negative, and it was Microsoft's completely terrible showing when they had the stage on the night before E3. It was all Kinect, and none of the games looked good. Obviously, they showed like Mass Effect, and they showed Mass Effect, which looked really good, but its Kinect functionality seemed forced. Every game here that used Kinect as an add-on seemed really forced. That used it as its primary gimmick seemed terrible.
Except...
Well, okay, the Tom Clancy game that uses the...
No,
Tom Clancy one.
That's not the one to talk about. Mass Effect with the voice control.
I did like the voice really, control for Mass Effect.
Even that felt really clunky the way they were using it to me. I would much rather just be able to hit the button and just instantly boom, 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 done. I don't have to waste time talking to my computer.
Well, you wouldn't be talking to your computer, you'd be talking to your Xbox.
Well, yeah, but...
It is a computer, John. Hello.
Yes, but I think Eric meant PC and... The PC isn't getting the voice activation.
Sorry, but, I've been playing my Mass Effect games on PC. So,
but doesn't it feel
PC doesn't get the voice activation makes me disappointed. I understand the reasoning behind it because the Kinect already has the voice recognition hardwired into it, but it still makes me sad.
Well, doesn't it feel like the Microsoft conference was like put together like a week beforehand?
Yes,
it did.
Really seems like they sat down and realized, oh crap, we have nothing good to show. Throw together a trailer for Halo 4 and we'll call it a day.
I'm like, where's my Cirque du Soleil? Where's the elephant? Man.
We didn't get the awesome shiny ponchos. We didn't get anything this year.
Yeah, so maybe they felt like they overdid it last year, but I still felt like they could have done a more interesting presentation. But nothing was as dry as... Sony's what was the thing called? PS Vita?
What, you didn't like it?
I like it, but like they went on and on and on, and like this is definitely like aimed at like press people who are really interested in that. Mm-hmm. Because none of it was like even the what do you call it, the Uncharted thing for it.
Yeah.
Wasn't really doing anything for me.
The Vita as a device looks great. I like what they've been able to do with it, and the price point really did impress me. The Vita's presentation, though, really was just like, oh yeah, they could have been announcing a sequel to a franchise the way they kind of rolled it out. It seemed like that there was nobody really excited. Everyone knew it was coming because of how badly it had been leaked over the previous bunch of months. It just really felt kind of bleh.
I felt like the presenters that were talking about all the development possibilities or whatever were kind of bored. It was kind of dry. Really, really
and
dry.
And then you had Ken Levine from Irrational Games coming out to... It really seemed like somebody put a gun to his back and said, you are going out there and talking to talk about a Bioshock, a Rapture-based Bioshock game that would eventually appear on the Vita. And it's like, it just felt so forced and so wrong. I mean, the whole thing just was awkward.
I think, didn't he, like, poo-poo it or something? And that's why, like, you know, to get back in the Sony good graces.
Yeah, there was some kind of underhandedness going on there.
All right, so Eric, you've played The Witcher, right?
I have played The Witcher.
I can't manage it. I don't know how you do it.
I was really, really bored in college for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's... I started playing it. I was like, you know, I understand the game is kind of hardcore, but really, does the game have to start at 11? I mean, can I like, warm up a little bit first? Jesus Christ. But anyway, the second Witcher, which looks gorgeous, but I can't get it because I can't bring myself to pay the first Witcher, is defecting to the consoles, at least to the 360.
Defecting.
Honestly, this isn't that much of a surprise. For those of you who remember and were a little bit more paying attention to the Witcher saga, for a while there was a console spin-off slash port that was planned to be released called The Witcher Rise of the White Wolf. It was going to be an Xbox exclusive and basically be The Witcher with probably a bunch of fan mods added in as DLC or like free additional content.
My friend said that The Witcher felt like, to him, it was made for a controller. He says he swears he can tell by the controls that it was made for a controller.
The Witcher 2, maybe. I haven't been able to play it yet. I've been way too busy and Steam sales.
He's talking about Witcher 1.
Really? No. From the way it plays to me, this is very much a PC RPG.
Yeah. Well, you know, not a lot of time spent on it. Just, you know, another PC exclusive becoming not exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So, on to the meat and potatoes. This is where we really want to bring out the big guns. Mm-hmm. EA has decided they're going to compete with Steam. And here's...
Derp a derp.
When it first came out, when this news first came out, it seemed like it kind of happened at the same time. We had the E3 Origin announcement, then Crysis 2 dropped from Steam, and then a bunch of games that EA was releasing for Steam stopped showing up on there, like the new Alice, the Star Wars game is going to be exclusive to Origin. Crysis says it's exclusive to Origin, but it's also on... Direct2Drive and a few others. Just recently, today I think it was, or it was announced today, that Dragon Age 2, Dragon Age Origins 2, or whatever it's called, dropped from Steam. And I'll bet you that Mass Effect 2 is on its way from being dropped, and here's why. EA is channeling all of the DLC sales directly into Origin, so you don't actually buy anything
through Steam anymore.
Yeah, so you just buy the game. Valve doesn't like that, and I agree, because, you know, was it any fun getting the DLC on the EA store and then having to download that file and then, like, having to install it and then having to activate it if you don't have it automatically logging in? Because somewhere in the patches this year, the auto-login thing stopped working properly. So every time I launched Mass Effect 2, it would sit there for a while trying to connect to the Cerberus network.
I noticed that, too.
So I turned off the auto-login to sidestep that. So whenever I install any DLC after that, I have to log in, authenticate. It's not really a big deal, but, like, if you get DLC for Borderlands, you just fire it up and off you go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. It would make sense.
Go ahead, Dalton.
I was just going to say, it's not horrible, but it is kind of an annoying runaround that they make you do.
It's entirely geared at them not giving any kind of a cut from the DLC to Steam. That's all this is about.
Mm-hmm. It would make sense if it was, like, a good financial move. Like, I could understand it, but this doesn't really even seem to be that good of a financial move for them. I mean, the installed user base of Steam compared to Origin is... terrible. Origin has no users right now. It's not going to get any users except for being forced. Like,
yeah,
Steam
this
has
is definitely
daily, like daily 66% and 75% off sales on games. It has massive things such as the recent summer blockbuster sale, which I spent way too much money on. And it's publisher agnostic. EA is only going to sell EA games, and it's never going to put them on sale. It has no indications that it's ever going to put them on sale. And it's just another platform that I have to install on my computer alongside Steam, alongside Games for Windows Live, none of which I actually want except for maybe Steam because of all its social networking.
Yeah, Steam has benefits. That's why it's worth having Steam running with the games. When Steam first came out, I didn't like having to have it run with games because, like, I need to have a network connection for a single-player game. But gradually you get over that because when you're on your PC or your laptop, you're going to be online. That's like 90% of the reason to have a computer.
Yeah.
But what I think is the problem is this opens the door to a much wider problematic implication. What if Activision does this? What if Ubisoft does this? We're not going to sell our stuff on Steam. We're going to sell stuff through our own digital networks, and Ubisoft has already started something similar.
Yep, they have you something.
You play.
Yeah, frankly, I don't care because that's how much I know about it. But
yeah, so if we reach this point where like nothing shows up on Steam and now there's no longer a unified place to get it, I mean, I don't care that EA has Origin. They can have it. They even have like what I consider very reasonable DRM restrictions. You can activate up to 5 machines in 24 hours, and if you run out of 5 machines, wait 24 hours, you can activate 5 more.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
That's
perfect.
Not bad, yeah.
And it doesn't. You don't have to run the Origin client in order to run the game. So after the initial activation, the game's just run. That's awesome. Great. But I'm still used to Steam. I still prefer Steam. Mm-hmm. I've got everything kind of under the same umbrella. But what if everyone takes all this stuff off of Steam? And we've got Activision's download client, Ubisoft's download client, EA's download client, and whoever else, you know?
You know, this will kind of be like what happened to GameTap.
I don't think it's that bad. Steam has...
Well, it's not that bad, but... but, you know...
I mean, it's kind of strange. I mean, Steam was actually kind of a bold move on Valve's part. The problem is that Origin is just ill-timed. Mm-hmm. And that's the same problem I keep seeing with EA, is the Me Too response. We want to beat out Call of Duty. I'm like, how about not aiming at Call of Duty, aiming at making the best shooter you can possibly make? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so we're going to beat out Steam because we're going to make Origin and make all our games exclusive. You know, how about you just compete with Steam by giving us incentives to come to your package? You know, that's you're not going to get good early adopters by forcing people to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, this kind of, for me, this Origin thing really irritates me because I really want to play Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Yeah,
but I just kind of think, okay, if it's going to be exclusive to Origin, what's this going to do for the sales and so player base?
The only thing about that is that's the only game I think won't be cannibalized by the move, because
anticipation is strong enough for Old Republic that it's not going to hurt. Old Republic and Mass Effect aren't going to get hurt too bad by it, but
Mass Effect is going to lose my sale if they don't get it on Steam. That's the beginning ending of my point on that one. And I've got a list of games I'm looking forward to coming out, and I've actually removed Battlefield 3 and Mass Effect 3 because if they're not on Steam, I'm not buying them. And if this is EA, if they're willing to cut off their arm to spite their face, then, you know, they can roll in it. But there's a lot of people saying that they're not going to buy it if it's not on Steam. Some people are saying they're going to buy it from the stores. I'm not regressing to getting a disc. Absolutely not. So I would rather resist, and then if the reviews for the games are terrible, then I'll feel all the more justified. Although I think they'll nail Mass Effect. Battlefield 3 looks gorgeous, but you know, because they're trying so damn hard to steal Call of Duty's thunder, which I don't think you have to do. Infinity Ward is gone. Like, the people who made Infinity Ward are gone. You don't have to steal Call of Duty's thunder. But just aiming at a Me Too response, I think, is a big problem.
Honestly, Bad Company 2 was their step towards having a Modern Warfare single-player type game. And I've been playing through Bad Company 2. I love it to death. But its multiplayer was still a Battlefield game. It was still get the capture point, go in. It had a little bit more of a, you know, militaristic warfare feel. I come in, you know, playing more like the Star Wars Battlefront games. But it was still it still felt like a Battlefield game. That being said, I will definitely check out Battlefield 3. But if it is trying to be too heavily being a Modern Warfare 3 knockoff, then I'm not going to be happy. So far, I don't think it will be, but we'll wait and see what it does.
So, anything else to say on Origin?
They're evil?
I wouldn't say they're evil, but idiotic and ill-timed, yes.
Yeah, that I would
definitely
agree with.
But people say like it didn't just start when they announced Origin. The EA store became Origin, so the EA store has been around a while.
It's been around for a while, it's just nobody's cared.
Here's an example of a perfect faux pas on their part. They sold Mirror's Edge on Steam, they sold Mirror's Edge on the EA store, they sold Mirror's Edge on the Xbox 360, and of course in the stores on disc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you bought Mirror's Edge on Steam, you cannot install the DLC. The EA store is the only place to get it, and it doesn't work with the Steam install.
Makes me mad. Mirror's Edge was one of my favorite games from last year. I played the crap out of it.
So
yeah, I loved that game.
So it just kind of kills me that the thing I get with EA is, what, don't you want my money?
Well, when it comes down to it, it's all about profit. And obviously the higher-ups think, hey, let's compete with Steam and not give them anything.
I really hope I really hope this trips and falls on its face and they go back and do what they're supposed to do.
Well, if everyone has the general opinion that we do, it will most likely do so.
Yeah, but the problem is like, you know, remember the Steam group boycott Modern Warfare 2 and then,
and
like, on day one, 90% of them are playing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't dislike the lack of, you know, dedicated servers. So Modern Warfare 2, that never bothered me, you know. Matter of fact, the dedicated servers on Black Ops were a terrible disadvantage, in my opinion. All these little admins, you know, you play my way where I eject you and I ban you. I'm like, whatever, you and your EPIN. So I'm not really into the whole dedicated servers. I understand the benefit that you can, like, geographically find one that's better suited for your distance-wise, whatever, but the matchmaking hasn't been a problem for me for the most part. So there's a real-life holodeck, or maybe something like it, kind of, sort of.
Not even close.
Not even close. Yeah.
No. See, right now, it's just the design, but it's a design that could have some potential if keyed up with the right software.
Well, one of the problems when setting up your living room with your home theater and the 5.1 surround sound is, you know, how do you wire up the speakers? Well, you don't do that. You get your HoloPod, and then you're all set.
I think it looks like a giant egg.
We'll be posting links to the article about this in our show notes so you guys can see kind of what we're talking about. But what it is basically a giant sphere that you sit inside. It's got kind of a bench inside, and it's got an immersive 360-degree screen all over the interior of the pod, as well as integrated speakers kind of everywhere. It's supposed to be able to have motion-sensing floor panels, motion-sensing cameras. It should be able to track your position inside the pod.
Yeah, so this is a step on the way to the holodeck. No, we don't have holograms. No, you don't have a holographic sex slave. Stop thinking about it.
Oh, no one was thinking about it until you mentioned it. You are sick.
Orion slave girls. Wait, what were we talking about?
Thank you, John, for bringing that.
Speaking of the living room and graphical interfaces, Nintendo is launching the new console, the Wii U.
Oh,
great idea. Like, honestly, I really like the concept of the console. Name sucks. Like,
yeah.
Of course.
I seriously believe that they sat down in a room, smoked crack, and came up with the name while they were on.
Okay, here's my question. How many of you guys have seen Kung Pao Enter the Fist? Really retarded movie from about 2001, 2002.
I saw it.
Never. Okay, you know what the Wii U reminds me of, Ben.
Yeah.
Yes. That being said, the name is terrible. The concept is really cool. As usual, Nintendo is pushing, is trying to push innovation, not graphically, not technically, but more in an interaction sort of way.
Yeah, but I think what they've done is, in my opinion, too involved. I think the elegance of the Wii in the first place was that it was, you know, aside from, you know, the Wii Chuck being, you know, the controller broke into two pieces and connected with the cable, it was still very elegant, you know, very simple. I think this takes it to a point where it's a bit too involved. I mean, this is their answer to having all these various different peripherals. I can understand that that's where they were headed with it, but I think in the long run, it may not be as interesting to people as the original Wii was.
This console feels rather sloppy to me.
Really?
No, I just see nothing innovative about this. I see a Nintendo Wii that's just been upgraded with a new controller, and that's pretty much it.
Here's the thing that I see. Yes, it is, in a way, it's basically a Wii 2.5 upgraded with a new controller, and it doesn't help that it...
Well, it's more than that. I mean, the hardware is more powerful. It's more powerful than the powerfulest consoles today.
Well, that's what they say.
That being said, the real power is that new controller. It's not so much the interaction. First, it's not so much how you hold it, even the fact that it's got a touchscreen and it's more or less a white iPad. It is the fact, this is where I really love it, that it can stream from the console wirelessly to the controller of the full game in its entirety, in its full resolution, wirelessly without lag, or at least so they're claiming. That is insanely impressive to me.
And it totally doesn't give you testicular cancer.
And no, of course not. that being said, Nintendo has decided to split their efforts with this. The Wii was all about casual gaming with your friends standing next to you. That's with the classic Wiimotes. The interaction that the Wii U has with the classic remotes, keeping that is, you can tell that they're keeping an eye on that. At the same time, Nintendo has also confirmed that you will only be able to use one of the big screen Wii U controllers with one Wii U console. You can't have two or three controllers with one console, which makes sense because you're trying to stream four separate pictures to four separate consoles, and any console would buckle under that load. So if you've noticed, they have really pushed online capability, because those new the pads will be hardcore used in what would be considered hardcore games, shooters, mini-map games, action-adventure games, Assassin's Creed style.
Yeah.
Because you will be using those multiplayer with other people online.
I still think they're kind of reaching. It's sort of like, you know, I don't know if you follow the car industry, but Aston Martin was talking about taking a Fiat and kind of reskinning it to give it somewhat of a Aston Martin flavor and then selling it, you know, for as an expensive car. I'm like, that's not what Aston Martin is. There's no point in doing that.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the reverse. This is like Fiat saying, oh, we're gonna put a Cadillac symbol on our car and people will buy it because it's a Cadillac. I'm like, no, that doesn't quite make it. And I think this is – I'm glad that they're trying to hit the hardcore market. Mm-hmm. I think by the time that they're a force in the industry, Xbox and Sony will have their new consoles out, and people say, I'll just wait for the next Xbox or PlayStation, because that's exactly what happened when Xbox 360 came out. People said, I'll wait for the PlayStation 3.
And then the PlayStation 3 ended up being $599.
Let's not. Yeah, it was like more around $800.
Yeah, it was $800 when it came out.
Let's not talk about the idioticness of those two companies.
Well, Sony's like, well, it's going to last you for 10 years. I'm like, yeah, it's the console's going to last Sony for 10 years, but the original ones that came out, not so much.
Yeah. That being said, we are obviously very early in the next generation cycle. I would fully expect to see announcements about PS4 and Xbox, 720, I guess we call it, next year at E3. This console was slated for fall/winter of 2012. It's going to come down to software. It is what's going to happen. They're going to need a strong first party showing of their own internal games, as well as they need to prove that third-party developers are actually on board with this one.
See, and I don't see that happening, because the other two consoles have matured. The developers know how to develop for it. And you always know that the first titles that come out for a new console are always going to be a little clunky. So there's going to be some fun to see how that plays out.
That being said, Nintendo has been trying to patch things up. The big EA spokesperson they had on stage at the E3 conference, that was a huge step for them, honestly, admitting in their show that, you know what, we need help and we need other people to help make this thing a success. We can't just sit here and you know, brag about all of our own first-party games, because that's not going to sell to the market that we want to sell to. This
yeah, time. Well, two of them, Zelda and Mario.
Well, you know, that's kind of one of the problems I've actually been having with the game industry just recently, and Nintendo is a major focus of this, but not just Nintendo. I mean, I am sick of the regurgitated same old titles again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
When Mass Effect came out in 2007, like, it was just a fresh new IP out of nowhere, and it was solid to the bone. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing with Mirror's Edge, a whole new gaming concept out of nowhere. It wasn't quite as solid, obviously, but
yeah,
it was still something fresh, something new, and something I hadn't ever played before.
Exactly. Now, the thing, I understand that you can add new gameplay innovations to an old franchise and then call it a new game, but I mean, and I know you guys don't all agree with me, but the regurgitation of continuous Zelda games, continuous Mario games, continuous Super Smash Brothers, mm-hmm, Mario Kart, like, seriously, Nintendo, get a creative bone and do something.
See, John, I agree with you completely. It is ridiculous that they keep milking the freaking cow.
And there's a lot of developers in Japan saying that, you know, the same thing, you know, with these people they've lost the spirit, they've lost the heart, you know, and no other place is it more obvious than, like, the latest Final Fantasy.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
I mean, remember when the GameCube came out and they actually had more than just Zelda and Mario? We had Pikmin, Animal Crossing.
Yeah, because the GameCube was actually a platform that was it wasn't quite as powerful as the other consoles, but it was close enough that a lot of games could cross over to it.
Nintendo has an opportunity to do this again. The only real Nintendo franchise that has even dared to step outside its sphere of happiness in the last 10 years is Metroid, because you had the Prime Trilogy, which were first-person shooter adventure games, which was unheard of for a Nintendo franchise, and then you had Other M, which... Yeah, say what you want about the story, but going back to kind of a very traditional 2D side-scrolling game, 2.5D side-scrolling game, using the modern technology, the modern graphics, and able to mesh it with some first-person elements, it was, again, another new gameplay breath of fresh air And Metroid continues to be their franchise where they're saying, you know what, I'm going to experiment with something new. And it's tended to work. Again, your mileage may vary with Other M.
Well, I played and enjoyed the old Metroid 2D side-scroller on Super Nintendo.
Oh, yes, yes. I played it, I beat it, too. It's amazing. That being said, that seems to be the only franchise that Nintendo has actually said, you know what, we're willing to take a risk and do something different.
Yeah.
Is it because it's not the number one money-making franchise? Maybe. It's still popular enough to get good sales no matter what they release, but at the same time, it's not The Legend of Zelda. It's not Super Mario Galaxy 37. It's
37.
Nintendo needs to start waking up and realizing, you know what, nobody cares about Skyward Sword because you haven't actually made a new Zelda game since Ocarina of Time. So...
You know, that's actually a pretty valid statement.
Well, the argument I make continuously is I'm getting sick of the remakes. Some remakes are worth seeing, like the new Sherlock Holmes movie was a really good movie, in my opinion. But then, when's the last time we had a Sherlock Holmes movie?
It's been, 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
Sherlock Holmes, but they're remaking
Spider-Man. Wait a minute, didn't we just have a Spider-Man film?
On top of it, watch the Spider-Man trailer. It's a complete Mirror's Edge knockoff. Go figure.
No. Let's not go into superhero.
So the originality vibe, the whole problem I have with it is like I hear people talk about there is a thread where they're talking about Monolith's new project is something to do with Batman, but it's a shooter. I forget, like they're imposters.
I think it's called Gotham City Imposters, and it's basically like a multiplayer party shooter that's coming out on the Live Arcade on the PlayStation Store and Steam. And it's basically think like of Team Fortress 2, Monday Night Combat, kind of that small multiplayer shooter, only with basically two gangs of people, one dressed as Batman knockoffs, the other dressed as Joker knockoffs. The concept and like the setting is really cool, and it has precedent in some of the comics and some of the other Batman franchise, media outlets out there. That being said, when you strip all the awesome Batman-ness away of it, it's another budget third, first-person shooter multiplayer game.
I don't understand. How did we end up in this place? I mean, Monolith made so many AAA titles all over the years, but the place I was actually going with that point though is. The reason we get all this regurgitation is because these are safe titles, because mm-hmm. these companies know these are cash cows.
Yep.
But I think that they're, like, I'm wondering if Modern Warfare 3 is going to do as good as Black Ops, because Black Ops was following the momentum of Modern Warfare 2, but I think a lot of people realize, like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't the same company making the game here, and mm-hmm. it's not as strong. The same thing with, Monolith made a lot of original things over the year, but then some people say things like, where's my next Shogun? Where's my next this or that? That's games that Monolith has made. Mm-hmm. And I was lamenting for the longest time, where's my next No One Lives Forever? But at some point you realize, okay, the last No One Lives Forever was like from 2001. There's not another one coming.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're pretty clear. The franchise is dead. And it's time to move on and focus on other things. And I think that's the vibe that I wish more people would get, more companies, more developers. Just it's time for something original.
Well, most companies only play the numbers game.
Yeah, I understand that, but that doesn't always play out either.
No
franchises that are guaranteed to be sellers aren't always, especially if they regurgitate the same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the cow runs dry.
Yeah. Oh, how I wish it would on some franchises.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So talking about lots of money, Torchlight has been pirated over 5 million times in China, and the developers are fine with that.
Wowza.
First of all, I love Torchwood, or Torchlight. I haven't actually seen Torchlight.
Whoa, way different.
I love Torchlight and its developers. Like, they've got an awesome sense of humor. They've really been chill about the games, like, industry in general. They've just been riding it and not getting fazed by it. And their approach here is actually really kind of refreshing.
Yeah, they don't want to force... Their whole thing is we're going to be nice to the customers, and the customers in return will be nice to us. Mm-hmm. As a perfect example, they had somebody who emailed them and says, I pirated the game, but I liked it so much that I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we get a lot of emails like that. And so we try to keep our DRM as, it's not crazy DRM. We try to be unobtrusive.
Mm-hmm.
And... They look like, they're not a big developing/publisher house, and they admit that, so that means that they have different factors at work in their particular pursuits. And that's totally understandable, obviously. But I wish that more companies would stop fighting piracy so hard, which is already a losing game. If I want a free copy of Mass Effect 3 when it comes out, I can get it. There's no question about that. The same thing for anything else. So,
the nice thing about this is they aren't the only company who's been looking at this. To kind of fall back on an earlier point that we were talking about, CD Projekt, the Polish developer who did the Witcher franchise, also has pulled all DRM off of both Witcher games and has released tons of free DLC. There have been at least 3 or 4 patches for Witcher 2 that has come with free DLC. They haven't charged a thing for it.
That's what I think they all should do. Once you're past the first couple months, or even the first year,
yeah,
all the DRM should drop off because you've made your money. You're not going to have a spike of like 2 million sales the second year. That's just not going to happen.
And again, about the CD Projekt idea, that was exactly what they said. They had DRM on The Witcher, and by day 3 of it coming out, they released the 1.01 patch. And they said, you know what? The DRM for The Witcher 2 was meant to stop piracy from happening before the game came out. Well, the game's out, so we don't need DRM anymore. So they pulled all the DRM code out of the game.
And Torch, the makers of Torchlight also treated it like the piracy is also sort of like, you know, free advertising.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I mean, sure they're probably losing sales, but it's, first of all, it's China. How many sales are you going to make there in the first place?
Exactly.
Second of all, it's getting the word out. People who otherwise wouldn't be able to play your game because of whatever restriction, now you'll get a chance.
Yeah, definitely. And, I like the whole approach of, you know, we'll respect you, and maybe that will cause you to respect us back.
But, you know, this is the internet. I mean, that can be a double-edged sword because, you know...
It can, but...
Because, you know, you can try to be respectful to people, and they throw it in your face, you know, being all trollish about it, because that's just the way people are. You know, mm-hmm. People even try to be reasonable, you know, and it doesn't fly. I'm like, people like, QQ more, you mad, bro? Whatever, just... You know, I hate that. I really do. But, you know, it's one of those things like when it comes to people just taking the time to put Netcafe out there. Some people might pirate it just because they can. But as you know, Gabe Newell at Valve said, you know, pirates are underserved customers. Mm-hmm. And the way the push of the DRM, which I understand, if they take it off later on, I'm actually cool with it. I'm entirely cool with it. Bioshock did it. I wish that the 2 Crysis games would do it, because I actually have to hack my Crysis 1 and Crysis Warhead in order to play them on Steam, because they had 5 activations and they're gone. Mm-hmm. And people say things like, well, you could uninstall it and it removes the activation. I'm like, I don't uninstall things when I reinstall my computer. I put the Windows disk in and I format. I have my data backed up. I don't uninstall Steam. I don't uninstall iTunes and deactivate my accounts that are activated. I'm like, nobody does that.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy says, well, I do it. I'm like, well, you're the one guy.
Yeah. The one guy ever.
So talking about restrictions and DRM, L.A. Noir came out for the consoles originally. And now, as I suspected, it's become big enough on the consoles that it is now going to see its day on the PC in this fall.
This makes me incredibly happy. I watched my little brother play a couple missions of L.A. Noir, and... It's, you know, we were talking about it earlier. We're looking for fresh new ideas in the game console industry. This is it. This is an adventure game set purely in the 30s, classic gangster mobster movie, classic noir detective work. It's got a different feeling. It's got a new style of gameplay. And frankly, it's kind of what we've been looking for. It's that breath of fresh air.
I can't wait to play it.
I like that it's new and everything. And, you know, like, that's a new concept. You know, like you said, I like all that stuff about it. I'm not sure if I'll play it, though.
What?
I might try it out, you know, if there's a demo or something, that, you know, for a PC demo, but, you know, if I want to like it.
It's not going to be a demo.
That, yeah, in for a year, but...
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's never
like
a
PC demo. But...
I have some up and downs, I'm looking forward to the keyboard and mouse, but it's going to want a controller for the driving part. So I was like, it's going to be a little rough on the driving stuff, but it'll depend how it plays out, which will decide which one I end up using most for the game. Like, a perfect example of a third-person game that seems like it would be better with a controller, the Batman game, was perfect with keyboard and mouse.
It really was.
So, you know, you don't always need a controller for stuff. But, like, Assassin's Creed, you really need a controller. It really doesn't work in the keyboard.
I could not play Assassin's Creed without a controller. That would have killed me. repeatedly.
So talking about, you know, console games going to the PC, how about a PC-exclusive shooter from the makers of Witcher 2 and Bulletstorm?
You know, I watched the YouTube video that you linked for that, and I thought that the little teaser for that looked really interesting, but there really wasn't a lot there.
I think the problem is there isn't a lot of information yet, but it looks like a mixture of, like, future tech with, like, you know, regular world tech. So it's sort of like it's the beginning of the tech renaissance, sort of like what Deus Ex has kind of set in. As I mentioned pre-show, it seems like this is going to be the new first-person shooter meme du jour. It's going to be, everything's going to be in the future now.
Yeah, it gives me, watching the trailer, it really gives me a Deus Ex vibe, especially from, like, the first game and Human Revolution, the earlier two games. I don't know. It's like, we don't know anything about it yet. I can't say anything. I'm honestly not excited about it because I've heard nothing about it and I see a pretty generic trailer.
I am happy we're getting a PC-exclusive shooter. I hope it's solid, is my whole thing.
Yeah. I'll be excited once I hear more about what it is, basically. Well, so.
I thought Bulletstorm was fun, but they could have opened it up a bit more than they did. It's graphically a gorgeous game. It's got some potty humor that's not as bad as what I heard Duke Nukem ended up having.
Yeah, Duke Nukem insulted your intelligence. Bulletstorm had fun with it.
Yeah, you know, the first time we meet the girl, she's like, "I'll kill your dick. You'll kill my dick. I'll kill your dick."
Really?
So, you know, but Witcher 2 folks have been, you know, until the purported port of Witcher 2 to Xbox 360 have been PC exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in some cases, PC exclusive maybe could make a comeback, hopefully. Maybe, I wish.
Yeah, I think
one can cross their fingers.
I think a lot of places also, like, I'm sort of playing up to the industry's perspective that if they only get a safe AAA game, that people will buy that. Well, I don't really venture out into a lot of different games because of A, cost, and B, there's no demos.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the bigger games are selling like 400,000 PC sales. That's not a small amount of change. I'm sure that's worth whatever time it takes to make a demo.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought Black and White 2 years ago, I held off on it because there wasn't a demo. Then they came out with a demo. The demo sold me immediately. I went out the next day and got it. And then it turns out I didn't have to pay full price for it. I was like, if you had given me the demo before the game came out, I would have paid full price.
Patience has rewards.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, they could be talking about so much more of my money if they just gave me demos. So.
I definitely agree there. And, you know, like we were just mentioning, you know, L.A. Noir is not, like, my typical kind of genre as far as, like, the whole 30s detective thing. But if they did come out with a demo for the PC version, which, like you said, I seriously doubt they will. But if they did, I would try it. And then maybe I'd figure I'd like it. But I'm not going to go buy it when I don't even like the genre and then find out that I don't like the gameplay either.
I've actually learned to follow that instinct in me. Like if I have a sense that the game's not going to be good, I hold off. If Brink had not been bought for me, I would never bought it because I had this doubt. And when the reviews came out and when I played it my first time, I remember when I first started playing, like, this kind of sucks. It's pretty, but it sucked.
Brink in general is just a good concept marred by very, very poor execution.
Yes, incredibly poor.
Mm.
So they always showed you all the scenes where the people knew how to, like, use the stuff. But, like, a perfect example of, like, a game with a lot of potential that actually you see people using it and you can use it yourself is, like, the game that I'm addicted to, Modern Warfare 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's incredibly different variable ways to do things in that game. You can camp, you can run, you can do a more strategic, you know, crouch around corners. You can have fast guns that aim fast. You can have sniper rifles. There's a crazy thing called quickscoping. People aim at you a split second, go to aim to the sniper rifle, don't even actually look down the scope, pull the trigger, and they're back out, and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of annoying, but it's just, there's a wide open world of things to do there. That's what Brink was supposed to give us, and it didn't. So, I'm a little sad about that, but since we're on a negative note, let's call Chad here and let's talk about some Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, the monotony. So, the
can we just say the title of this article? It's on Destructoid.
Yes, I will not utter the words.
Fuck off, Kingdom Hearts. That's what it says.
It is so appropriate because, as much as a Kingdom Hearts fanboy that I am so tired of them milking the cow. And this title alone just says, yeah, we're running out of ideas.
Well, do you recall that I objected to the name Birth by Sleep?
Now, see, that I will argue with you about because I thought that was a good title.
I will kind of agree with Chad only because it's not 385 divided
by
8.
It's not a fraction. And, you know, every time I hear that, I do that in my head. Okay, 300. This just tells me, and you know, there's actually reason behind this, and this really makes me dislike Tetsuya Nomura, the guy who makes Kingdom Hearts. Back when they were actually making Kingdom Hearts, the guy who made Final Fantasy, I can never remember his name, came up to him and said, so how are you going to play out this entire franchise? And he says, well, I'm going to keep it simple and not make it complex and just tell the story the way I want to tell it.
Really?
He said, no. Make it complicated and spread it out.
Yeah.
And so he's like, and so since this guy obviously has more experience than Tetsuya, he's like, oh, okay. So that's why we have all these stupid spin-offs.
How many different platforms is that on anyway?
It is on PSP, Nintendo
DS,
DS, Nintendo Game Boy, PlayStation 2. I think that's the majority of it.
With the game announced for 3DS too.
Yeah, this one, Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, which is the worst title in the world, is supposedly going to be the last spin-off before Kingdom Hearts 3. It took them this long to get to that stage.
So we need three pretentious spin-offs to understand Kingdom Hearts 3.
Well, you know, the worst part about this is that they could have done without half of these spin-offs. Like, the one for the DS, 358 over 2 days. Or is it something? Anyway, I don't care.
358 over 2 days. But I didn't even know that there were other Kingdom Hearts games than Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2 until I saw this article.
Well, see, then you've been blessed. But all that really was an additional plot line to Roxas, the kid
who nobody cared about.
No one cares. He's a blonde-haired kid that's just randomly there. I mean, when they made Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, that made sense. I was okay with that. It was like, okay, so this takes place before Kingdom Hearts 2, and it kind of introduces you to the characters in Kingdom Hearts 2. It made sense. I was okay with that. That's okay to have an in-between sequel between titles. Then they just started the monotony. They went backwards. They went forwards. And now we're finally getting back to Sora after 1, 2, 3. Yeah, only 3 spin-offs. I can't believe that. Seems like more. And I just don't care anymore. And this is exactly what that article states. Who cares anymore? Everyone who cared about Kingdom Hearts 3 doesn't care anymore.
Which is sort of the same point I made earlier, you know, continuing to regurgitate stuff, and then maybe it's just time to move on. You know, if they were going to put off the development and make Kingdom Hearts 3, you know, a massively awesome game, and we didn't hear anything about it for the longest time until sort of like what happened with Half-Life 2. Half-Life 2 didn't exist to anyone for how many years until finally the one E3, oh, here it comes, it's coming next fall. And it didn't come next fall, it came the following year. But even still,
yeah,
it had been in development.
There was the piracy thing involved with that. But
yeah, it was in development for like 6 years before they even, you know, decided to tell anybody it existed.
Mm-hmm. And also, it really is the fault of Square Enix for marketing this game wrong. And I think they should have done it the way you were just saying, John. Maybe not made any spin-offs, just waited and then made Kingdom Hearts 3. Because they basically took the guy, Tetsuya Nomura, took him off the Kingdom Hearts project and made him focus solely on Final Fantasy 13 and Versus. And that's taken up all his time. And so they said, okay, we don't want this franchise to wither. So in between all your work on these, just make all these spin-offs.
Yeah, I have a lot of fear that the third game isn't going to be great, but it'll probably be graphically gorgeous, though.
Frankly, I hope that he retires. and let someone else drive the Kingdom Hearts franchise, because he's just doing it wrong.
Or they could just drop it all together and...
They should just end it with three. I mean, I can't believe I'm uttering that, but I really just want them to stop.
Game development, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
So, I think we're all pretty unanimous that our primary platform of gaming is the PC.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting. This is a rumor only, not confirmed. I hope it's true, which is why it probably will end up to be false. But there is a potential that Windows 8 will be able to play Xbox 360 games.
Intriguing.
So, now, I would add provisos. The game should support keyboard and mouse, which they probably wouldn't if they did play on the PC. But this would kind of open you up. Like, you wouldn't have to rebuy games for PC and the Xbox. You could play them on the same platform.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know.
That being said, there have been hints and rumors that something like this is happening. Just recently, Microsoft decided to shut down the Games for Windows Live website and merge it into Xbox.com.
Which is why that almost makes sense. So Chad and I had a brief talk about that, I think, the night that I discovered this rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's suddenly I put that two and two together like that. Like, where it was just like, wait a minute. They're merging these two things, and there's this rumor about them playing games on Windows 8. Perfect. Only problem is that little interface tweak that Windows 8 has. Oh my god, I hate it.
Oh my god. Yeah, I'm just glad that you can make the interface, you know, more PC friendly and less.
Whenever they demo it, they're doing touchscreen. Like, I don't want to touch my display.
I don't want to touch my display. I mean, I watch porn with those hands. I can't. This is a bad idea for Windows PCs.
Oh, well, my whole point is, you know, it's an uphill battle keeping it clean as it is. You know, I come in and find the cat has chased something on the screensaver for a little while. I've got cat paw marks all over the screen or something.
Yeah, it's touch screen as a mobile device, I'm okay with. Apple's proven that mm-hmm. you can do it. But as a stand up, you know, I want to say stationary computational device, touchscreen doesn't quite make sense to me yet. It hasn't worked.
I like the idea of a Kinect gesture interface. I would be all over gesture.
I'm okay with Kinect gesture.
If you've ever used the Kinect gestures in the Xbox, it's a little clunky. So it would have to be like Minority Report level of accuracy. But if they achieve that, that's fine. But I still don't think that interface works for me because it's too much trying to turn the Apple iPhone/tablet movement they think the computer industry has going on into a mainstream. And I deal with everyday customers every day in my job. Like, none of my people that I deal with can even handle Windows 7, which I consider a very minor change to the interface. A lot of them freaked out over Windows Vista. They cannot handle this Windows 8 change. Cannot.
Well, I'm sorry. They're going to have to deal with it because progression is progression, whether you like it or not.
But if the change is... I don't know if you guys have heard, but Best Buy is rejiggering their layout, supposedly. They're going to focus more on tablets. So they're going to downplay computers and laptops and upplay tablets.
Which I've seen. I've seen, like, even the Best Buy in the Milwaukee here that I go to, there are... like, at the end of rows in the computer section, they have the Samsungs, they have the Motorola, they have the Zoom tablets, and then they also have the big stand with all the Apple devices, which is primarily showing off iPad 2 and iPhone. So they are really focusing on small touchscreen mobile devices. And for most end users, like, I'm thinking people like my parents, who, or at least my mom, who uses it for uploading photos, chatting with people, a tablet device is at... The technology is at a point where it starts to make sense for users to ditch the computer, get just a tablet, and be happy.
I see your point, but I don't think that we're there yet. I mean,
we're not. We're close.
We need local storage. We need swappable storage.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need the ability to connect to large-scale external storage if need be. It needs to be more independent. Like, the iPad is not independent of a PC. If you have an iPad, you need a PC. Well, I take it back. The iPad can be independent, but if you've got an existing library on the PC, there's no way to get to the iPad without, you know, connecting it. So,
and,
I don't know.
Like, and Apple is kind of attempting to start that transition with the latest MacBook Air. It really is an iPad with a keyboard. They're really focusing on trying to wean people off of traditional computers towards tablet devices. A lot of the things you were saying, connecting to external storage, that is really going to quickly become the realm of power users, admittedly, like all of us. But not too many other people deal, outside of computer power users, deal with external hard drives, deal with a lot of the, I guess, the more technical stuff that
yeah.
I like playing with.
Well, but then here's the same, you know, where you're kind of heading, whether you mean to be heading in this direction or not, is the ability to use the cloud.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Like, that's one of the best things I loved about when I had an Android phone. I just logged into Google, and there's my contacts, there's my email.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. But as people start accessing more and more data through the cloud, i.e. Netflix, i.e. their music and or yep. videos that are saved on Amazon, these mm-hmm. bandwidth caps that we have on our internet connections are going to start rearing their ugly heads. And so cloud, I mean, when these internet providers are trying to stifle Netflix, which is now supposedly 40% of the bandwidth being consumed in the U.S. today,
mm-hmm.
They are also stifling off a lot of other progress.
Which is kind of weird if you think about it. What kind of companies are actually making these tablets? Cell phone companies.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, and something else, too, is as far as interfacing with the computer, you know, I can see the benefits of using a touchscreen interface, but, you know, there are certain things I just need a keyboard and mouse for.
Yeah, there has to be a way to type, and there's no way we can do it with our thumbs. There just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, the tablets and stuff, you know, like even my iPod Touch has the touch screen keyboard, but it's nowhere close to using an actual keyboard. It's so clunky. It is such a pain in the ass to use. It's
what we need now is the voice recognition capabilities that Star Trek has.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I want a pad with two D's. So
once we do that, you know, then you know the keyboard mouse is, you know, kind of forgotten. I can see that. Mm-hmm. But since we don't have that,
yeah. Well, they're still working on it.
You know, I remember in like 1997 how it was going to be in the next 5 years. Okay, and we're nowhere nearer to it. And I think part of that is that there's just too much variance in the voices that humans have. Mm-hmm. You can get Dragon naturally speaking. You can do the hour and 45-minute reading test to get it to understand your voice. But if it misunderstands you, speaking with more emphasis makes it misunderstand you more.
Mm-hmm.
And I used it once at my office, and it was kind of funny. People would walk by the door of my office, which I had to have closed to insulate from the audio from the office. And random words would shoot into the computer from things that the microphone was picking up from people outside my door. And so, you know, the voice recognition stuff still has a massive way to go. Unless you live out in the country and you can assume absolute silence, voice recognition isn't really going to be the thing for a while.
Yeah.
I tried there's voice recognition on my car. I tried to tell it to dial Aaron, my friend Aaron. Did you mean zero? No, Aaron. Did you mean 30? Where are you getting the zero from? So, you know, I'll forget it. I'll just switch it myself. You know, so I understand, you know, voice recognition would fix it all up, but since we don't have that, the touch interface, it works, like I said, on small tablets. I wish that they would make more of them matte finish, because it seems, in my experience, the matte finish holds fingerprints less than the glossy finish.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't know if you've ever used a iPod or iPhone or any other touch device with a matte finish protector on it, but it feels like your hand slides over it so much more comfortably.
It really does. I love mm-hmm. how that works.
So, it does sort of, you know, detract from the picture a lot, but one of the things I hate about, like, a lot of the new computers and the new monitors having those glossy displays is it reflects everything, including the light source in the room and me, and I can't see the display for the reflections. I don't like that.
Yeah, so. I definitely don't like that either. I prefer the matte just because...
Yeah, because then I see my reflection, I'm like, oh, look at that gorgeous guy. Oh,
gosh.
He's so well endowed.
So talking about rampant egos and crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
there's a new trailer for The Last Airbender.
Oh,
the Legend.
I need a new sock right now. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Anyway, new trailer finally came out. We've been waiting a couple of years for this.
Yeah, and I'm not a rabid fan for The Last Airbender, and I enjoyed the trailer, too.
Mm-hmm. It's the thing that got me about it is it's so pretty. Like, the art style for the first series was good, and the artists were great at it, but they just seem to have upped their game for this new series. Like, the detailing at the locations, it is incredibly impressive with what they've been able to do.
And the music was good.
The music is good. Actually, it's recycled from an old trailer for Season 3, so I can't comment on the music, really. But
speaking of which, is there such thing as a soundtrack for Last Airbender?
No. The fans have been clamoring for one for a long time because the music in the first series is really good. So there's nothing official yet. Through some unofficial ways, you can actually...
They had 3 seasons. It's been over for how long? They still don't have a soundtrack?
Nope.
If the series is as good as the last one, though... you know, if not better, but if it's just as good as the last one, I'm going to thoroughly enjoy it.
It's still going to be one of the best things on TV.
Really is, yeah.
If it gets anywhere close, it's going to be one of the best things on TV.
I guess just to recap for our listeners who really don't know about it, it is a sequel series to Avatar The Last Airbender from Nickelodeon from about 3.5 years ago. It is set 70 years after the end of the last series. It involves the next person in the Avatar cycle, based on kind of the Far Eastern Avatar idea where one dies and the Avatar is reincarnated. Unfortunately, this does mean that most, if not all, of the previous cast is dead. And we do get to meet some of the cast's descendants in this series. We know for sure that the main character, obviously, Korra, she is the next in the Avatar line. She is from the Southern Water Tribe. We know that we'll meet Toph's daughter as a major character because she's running the police force in the city that this is based on.
Yeah, I saw a guy. He looked like he was the son of Sokka the way he acted.
Mm-hmm. There's rumors about that. And although for those of you who know the series, know that Sokka breeding is probably a very, very bad thing.
Very bad idea. Boy,
that being said, the show is slated to come out next year. It's been delayed. But the reason it was delayed is because Nickelodeon pushed it up from being a 14-episode miniseries to a full 24-episode season.
I don't mind that.
I heard that they actually slated it for 2 seasons, too.
It's basically the 2 episodes. It's basically split into 2 seasons, yeah. So we're going to get a lot more Avatar. No matter what your thoughts were about M. Night Shyamalan's attempt at the series, Avatar is coming back in animated form. So I'm really excited about it. Majority of my friends are, too. My girlfriend and her roommates were apparently the first people, like, literally were view number one on YouTube once the trailer hit YouTube. So there was much squeeing happening with a lot of my friends about this, so.
Dun, dun, dun. Awesome. No, seriously, I'm really looking forward to it, because I really enjoyed the first series. It was brilliantly done. There's a very high production value, which you don't find in a lot of the TV nowadays, especially not animation.
Yeah, it's non-existent. Yeah.
It really is. And it doesn't help that one of my favorite actors, J.K. Simmons, is voicing one of the main characters, Tenzin, Aang's son, who's going to be Korra's airbending master.
That'll work.
Nice.
I want pictures of the Avatar! So,
wow.
If he talks about science, I want to laugh.
I'm going to burn the Avatar's house down with the lemons. Okay, in this case, it'd probably be the cabbages, but continuing, I guess they've got a grade-A voice cast lined up. Most of the cast has been announced. The animation looks pretty. They've got the original composers back. The two creators of the show are personally writing every episode, so they are really planning on cutting out filler, making it really focused, and coming out next year, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more and more about it as we get closer.
Very nice.
Excellent.
Now we're entering the session we like to call, what are you playing / looking forward to?
Ooh, pick me.
So, what's up with you, Chad?
I have actually finally gotten my hands on Batman Arkham Asylum.
Oh, it was on sale for $7.
Yes! I've been so eager to play that. I know it's been like up forever, but...
You know, for some reason, I don't know why, I've always thought of you whenever I hear the Joker. I'm not sure why.
That's actually quite flattering.
It's probably because he's the only cast member insane enough to kill the rest of us.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's just a certain level of insanity, I guess, I sort of detect in Chad.
Oh, you haven't seen me when I watch Batman.
Simmering under the surface. So have you started it up, or?
No, I didn't get a chance to actually play it yesterday, but because it took so long to install, and I had other things I needed to get done that day. But I finally got it, and looking very much forward to playing it.
So what about you, David?
Well, you know me, as our obligatory MMO guy, I went ahead and pre-ordered the Old Republic. I've been keeping up on it, and it's looking really good. You know, I've seen some of the trailers and previews at E3 and stuff about the gameplay and how the cinematic questing will work and everything. And I'm really liking what I'm seeing. I'm still kind of cautiously optimistic about it because, you know, even with all of this stuff they've shown, they've still kind of somehow managed to not really show a lot about it.
You know, Eric, you've been playing Star Trek, you have played Star Trek Online before,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I have.
Now, I think David might be the same way. When you play an MMO David isn't the same way. You play an MMO with quests. I don't know about you, but in Star Trek Online, I kind of like fast forward to like what's the green text? What am I supposed to do?
And
you won't be able to do that in the new Star Wars. It's all going all the quests are gonna be spoken, right?
Yep, that's the theory.
Holy voice.
It would be a good thing if the quests are interesting enough to make it worth your while.
It better not be like, yeah, bring me, you know, 12 pelts or something.
Bring me that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong franchise.
Bring me 12 Bantha pelts. No.
Well, David, let me ask you this. Is it true if you pre-order, you only have to put $5 down?
For the standard edition, that is true. There's an exception. If you pre-order from Origin, and apparently if you use a bank card. I'm not sure if that's for any kind of credit or debit card or just for debit cards or what, but apparently with certain kinds of cards, you do have to put the full amount down. But
it actually takes the $5, but it qualifies the rest.
Ah.
So you sit with this amount on hold on your account until they finally charge it.
Right, okay. So that's how that works currently. I actually got my pre-order from GameStop. And I got the collector's edition, so...
Oh, dang! You really went full out, didn't you?
To be honest,
yeah.
The collector's edition is worth it, if only for that awesome Darth Malgus statue. But, I still have a worry in my head that this is nothing more than World of Warcraft Star Wars edition. Yeah, they put a lot into it, but it's like,
I kind of disagree with you, Eric. I mean, I am cautious, but from what I've seen, this looks like an MMO that might just shake up the mix.
Well, that's why, you know, my friend who talked me into Star Wars, or sorry, Star Trek Online today, I said, I don't like grinding, and I don't like having to have somebody else. He's like, there's not a lot of quests you need other people. You can actually solo the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me into it. Like, if it can be
that's
a
what
massively...
I was thinking in Star Trek, I was having a lot of fun just playing, and I got up to, like, level 10 or so before my subscription ran out, and it's all on my own. Like, I didn't care. It was fun.
Yeah, so long as it's a massively single-player game, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Oblivion is. That's what Fallout is. That's what Skyrim is going to be.
Yep.
That's what Mass Effect is. It's a massively single-player game, and I love that. Where they focus on making a proper single-player experience. I worry if Star Wars is like that, and I'll have to wait until you know David reports back. If Star Wars is soloable, I'm looking forward to it. If it's not, I probably won't do it.
They very much said that at least a lot of the content will be able to be soloable, as particularly the main storyline for your character, because you have your companion characters and everything. You can basically make a full group just with your companion characters and you.
Yeah,
And
that's
then,
like Guild Wars with your
right.
henchmen.
Yeah.
And so obviously because they're AIs, they're not going to be as, you know, sophisticated tactics-wise as, you know, actual players. And so when you're going
into AI can be awesome.
And stuff, they say that it's going to be a little bit more difficult, you know, going into an instance with, you know, more companion characters than with actual players just because, you know, you're fighting with AIs at your side rather than...
real players.
People.
Yeah.
But yeah, but they say that basically you're supposed to be able to do the vast majority of the content on your own if you really want to.
Yeah, I like that. Because there is, you know, like, it's fun in groups of people.
None of us has any friends, so it's like, you know, why would we want, you know...
No, it's not so much that. I mean, maybe for you, but for me, I just hate running into jerks.
Well, you better stay off a PvP server.
No, I mean, I can tolerate people, but every once in a while, you'll get into those groups that are just ridiculously obsessed and think you need to know everything. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing worse than that, when you just want to see the content and have fun. Because a lot of MMO players just... don't get that. They just want to grind and get to the end content. They don't want to have fun with it.
So, well, yeah, that's the min-maxer crowd, and, you know, there are those people in every MMO, and there's always going to be that crowd in every MMO,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, just like everyone always says, welcome to the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's going to happen, but, yeah, at least you do have the choice of, you know, grouping with just your companions. But one thing I like about... Tor as well that they announced during E3 is that there will be when you're going to get a quest and you're in a group and say you know your friend is out getting the quest and you had to go stop by your bank, it will give you the option to appear at the quest giver as a hologram so that you can still participate in the conversation and everything.
Nice.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so you don't miss out on that just because, you know, your friend went up to go get the quest and you still get to participate in that whole thing.
So, hey, David, what are you going to do when you get in there? What are you going to be?
A couple things. Probably one of my characters is going to be a smuggler, and then, of course, my other character is going to be a Jedi. Sentinel, but I haven't decided just yet.
I thought for sure you're going to be a droid.
If that was a choice, that would be my choice.
Dalkin Star Droid.
I could still see it.
I would be Dalkin Star Droid too.
So what do you need to be, Chad?
Oh, Sith all the way. I was a Jedi in Galaxies. I'm going to the dark side.
Well, there's your problem.
Double Sith bow all the way.
Actually, I will probably try both classes because I like the premise of both. I like.
You see, I want to be a Sith, but I like the pretty Jedi Temple, so I'll probably have both too. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I have issues playing bad guys.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. I'm bad at playing bad guys in games.
You're gonna be running around lightning everyone.
You're Emperor all.
No, you will die.
I'm an actively evil bad guy.
No.
I'm nice to the people.
You will die.
Just because I have an evil sounding voice.
Easy line.
All right, so Eric, what are you looking forward to?
I haven't been able to play a whole lot lately because I've been working on a couple cosplay things and some con-related stuff, but I picked up the Assassin's Creed pack from the Steam Summer Sale, so I've got...
Awesome.
I'm finishing up Creed 1, and I've got Creed 2 and Brotherhood to look forward to. I've also been playing a ton of Monday Night Combat.
You have a gamepad for the Assassin's Creed, right?
Yes, I do. I picked
one. Okay.
I've also been playing a lot of Monday Night Combat. Take Tower Defense, Team Fortress 2, and the awesomeness of Monday Night Football, throw them together, and make a really fast-paced multiplayer shooter out of it. I've been loving it to death. I wish more people played it on PC. It's a blast. It's hilarious. Like, it is seriously one of the funnier games I've played. The commentary is just brilliant. And it's just fun to play. I'm not too good at it yet, but it's just fun to run around, shoot things, and I've just been loving it.
Awesome.
How many other games has bacon and churros as legitimate pickups for power? Yeah.
Taco Bell.
Churros. And what have you been playing, John?
What I've been playing isn't what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what I'm looking forward to.
Well, what are you looking forward to then?
We are a month away, roughly, from Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Finally.
I cannot wait. They've delayed it I don't know how many times, and now the pre-orders are out, but I'm not going to be burned by pre-order. I will pre-order like a week beforehand. So, and the only thing I want in any special edition of any game is I want the soundtrack. And I got burned on Mass Effect 2 because they didn't give me the whole soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which means if Mass Effect 3 ends up coming out on Steam, I won't be buying the special edition because I'll just get the soundtrack separately because that way I'll get the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Deus Ex Human Revolution looks awesome. I kind of hope the game isn't like entirely sepia-toned, but aside from that, it just looks it has the clean look of Mirror's Edge, mixed with a more futuristic world, not quite Blade Runner, kind of actually keeping in the same realm that that PC exclusive game from the Witcher makers of Witcher 2 and Bulletstorm.
Yeah.
It's kind
hard
of like
reset.
Yeah, hard reset. Our game, our world is just a bit in the future from say now. And so you've got like this juxtaposition of regular buildings with these weird, I don't know how to describe it. It's the buildings are really tall and also merged at the top. But they're not arches because they sort of all build this communal ceiling of all these tall buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this like, this is the old world, this is the new world, and of course you're sure to have, you know, people in the ghetto and people up top, that kind of stuff. So a lot of different dynamics are replaying in that game. I was worried when I heard that it was being ported to the PC instead of being co-developed for the PC, but then I found out that the porting house was the people responsible for bringing Batman to the PC. And we all know that that was a perfectly solid PC title, so
yeah.
I'm not worried about it at all. So I will be getting it on PC. That's pretty much my general rule. If it's on consoles and PC, I get it on PC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that typically is my general rule, too. I prefer to have all my games consolidated on my PC if I can.
And who knows, you know, pretty soon, you know, Xbox games will be playable on the PC anyway, so, you know, you will never have to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's drivers for the Kinect, so you can get the Kinect and connect it to your PC. It's like, connect and connect it to your PC.
That was bad even for you.
So, Eric. Make...
Yes.
Sounds like it's a good time to tie this off.
Yeah, I think it is. We've had a lot of fun talking with you, and it's time for me to put back on my towel.
That is so wrong.
That being said, for all of us here at Over the Fence, this has
been... Is it dry now?
Oh my, it is. This has been Chad.
Farewell.
David.
Oh look, I found my screwdriver.
Jonathan.
See you later, ladies.
And myself, Eric. And we'll catch you next time, Over the Fence.
I like David's pre-music intro.
On 6 months, Over the Fence!
Hello, ladies, and very well-cultured gentlemen.
Welcome to
Over the Fence, a podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology, and very, very fine-smelling body washes.
Either case, I tend to start giving people sex advice.
For Loco, one can, and it'll kill you!
Power thirst! Energy for men! Energy!
So, Dulcan just finished Assassin's Creed Brotherhood not that long ago.
Oh, cool.
And he turns to me while we're on our call, and he's like, you know the one thing that really disappointed me? I was like, you didn't kill enough people with your awesome.
Yeah. I love Tabascus.
I was playing Modern Warfare 2 last night. You know, I know this is crazy. I never do that. But there was a guy running around with Captain America, and he had his name like in red, white, and blue.
Nice.
I thought, okay, so he manages the red, white, and blue. That's cool. And then I found out later why he's calling himself Captain America. He's running around with a riot shield.
Very nice. I approve.
I feel like I'm high.
You don't know my secret, Dawkins. I was going to Anime Iowa tomorrow. I'm not. I'm coming to Illinois. You and me, oh, we're going to have the time of your life.
We're not yelling!
I just realized this is still recording.
Oh, Rondo, it will make you win that recording!